Hi, everyone. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Tiffany and I give our all to this podcast with curated information, researching platforms,
and this is how the podcast is going to go today.
And creating a show with the best up-to-date information we can. We have a vested interest in the growth and health of your business and hope you feel the same way about us. We've joined Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month, and you'll gain access to our community, exclusive behind the scenes, speaker access, publicity for your business, webinar discount opportunities, and more. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. Hello, and welcome to the Business Behind Small Business. Whether you're selling or staying, we're here to remind you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you are a business owner. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and
Tiffany Cato.
We're going to get down into the nitty-gritty to walk you through the more finite details of entrepreneurship, revealing the dots between startup.
Success.
Yay. Yeah. No one gets to a million without getting a little dirty. So there's a lot of business behind small business. Let's get to it. Could you be considering the sale of your business? Do you see an end date upon the horizon?
Depends which day you ask, I'm sure.
I know. There are days where I'm like, I'm done. And then I'm like, I love this job. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're seeing a retirement stage or age, and you want to start getting your ducks in a row. Maybe you don't see the value in what you're doing anymore, and you just want to get out. You have kids or a key person that can take that throne over from you, and now you feel like it's time. There's a lot of preparation involved, and if you don't follow the necessary steps, you stand to lose or owe a lot of money. Let's discuss selling your business internally, what it means, what you need, and how to do it in the most delicate way possible. Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes.
And ladies and gentlemen, always remember to turn off your cell phones.
I thought I turned it off.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, this isn't getting edited out, so.
Yeah. I can call them back.
You just take it.
Or I just. Well, while you're talking.
It better be a good reason for somebody to call you right now.
I bet you it's somebody trying to sell me something.
Oh.
That's the only kind of person that, or one of my kids asking me for something. Yeah, so we're talking about kids.
And
on that note, I'm going to step away so I can turn off my phone. And I'm going to let Tiffany talk so she can tell us about an internal sale. Because we talked about external sales before.
We did.
And now we're going to talk about internal sales. Because I feel like there's a lot more nuance to an internal sale than there is to an external sale.
Yeah, it's not any less complicated. Which is...
I feel like it's more complicated.
It might be. I think there's more emotions involved. That's why.
Which is what makes it
even more. Not I'm saying there's no emotions involved when you sell your business to an external party, but there's definitely even more on both sides of the table.
For sure.
So, here we go. Okay. So, would you like to...
Yep.
Okay. So, let's admit it. Sometimes selling it to a third party isn't everybody's cup of tea at the end of the day. You see, you've built your business over a long period of time. It's taken a lot of hard work. And maybe you've just always built it with the idea that you're going to hand it off to your kids or something a little bit different than, you know, kind of selling your soul and selling your company to somebody else who maybe sees it more like a transaction. Right now, we all know that I'm all for the, you know, party of selling it to others. So I certainly don't see it like it's selling your soul. So I'm just saying that a lot of people do see it as selling out when you sell your business versus keeping your business in your family. So you have some kind of family legacy that you've built over time. So, hey, to each their own. So when we talk about internal sales, it can be to your kids or it could be to your employees, right? Especially for the companies that are very lucky. Although these days, I feel like it's a pretty rare chance that you have somebody who will stick with you for 10, 20 years.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right. So if you're lucky enough that you have these employees that you really like are key employees and that really is your family, it feels like your family, you may want to sell it back to them. And that's also an option as well as selling internally. So I'm gonna go over what the options are. And for me, like, I actually don't know too much about the subject. So I actually had to do quite a bit of research. This is all Savannah's.
This is all me.
Yeah, this is all her. Last time it was me, this time it's all her. But I enjoy the research, so I did learn a few things myself, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And to kind of consolidate everything that I found, I broke it down pretty much into like three circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that as an owner, the first circumstance is you want to sell or you want to transition into your employees. The second circumstance is you want to sell or transition to your kids. And the third circumstance is you want to sell it, but you want to retain majority ownership for some time until maybe you feel like your kids and employees are ready. Mm-hmm. Or maybe when you feel like you're ready to actually back off from mm-hmm. the day-to-day in a major decision-making. Mm-hmm. So circumstance number one, if you want to sell or transition to your employees, there are five popular options. One is the employee stock ownership plan, also known as the ESOP. Mm-hmm. So this is a type of retirement plan that actually allows your employees to acquire ownership in your company. You're as the founder, you can actually sell all or a portion of their shares into an ESOP trust, which then holds the shares on behalf of the employees. And then the employees can actually earn shares of the company over time, making it as a form of kind of like a retirement benefit. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is super popular because, well, I mean, as you imagine, what better incentive it is for somebody to work hard for a company to know that they're actually getting ownership shares over time. And this can happen over years too. So this is not like a quick transition. An ESOP can happen over many, many years. Mm-hmm. So it's also incredibly popular, but can also be incredibly complicated. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly complicated, right?
It tends to be pretty popular. Well, it was pretty popular during the tech boom.
Yes. I wonder if it's still fairly popular now, I feel like, mm-hmm. in the tech boom still. Like, mm-hmm. it's more, right, because it's the whole idea, right? If you have your share.
I can't exactly pay you as much as I would like to pay you.
Right, because you're not quite funded enough. Yeah. You need the people to actually, you know, the knowledge workers to actually work really hard. Mm-hmm. This is just a very.
And it's one way just to kind of protect your company as well from outside sources, especially mm-hmm. if you have a really hot idea or a hot type style of company. Mm-hmm. You want to try and protect it and protect the employees too, because a lot of times when a company gets bought, first thing to go is your employees.
That's very true. When there's a lot of overlap, sometimes there's definitely cuts that happen mm-hmm. right after a merger or acquisition. So the second thing is you can consider a management buyout. So in a management buyout, the current management team of the business typically buys the founder's stake in the company. So this could be really attractive if the founder kind of really trusts the management team to continue the business success mm-hmm. as the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is a great alternative in a sense that, you know, usually your management team has followed you for some time. They know you pretty well. They know the culture of the business really well. They understand the goals. They probably bought into the goals already.
Or even created the goals with
mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. So you kind of feel good in the fact that you know that even if you're not going to be physically there or physically involved anymore, what you created will be carried on. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice. You can always do a direct sale. So the direct sale internally, probably similar to a direct sale externally, you probably have all the documents and everything. You just sell it at the fair value of the business. You have a sale contract, you have terms. And if there's a few employees maybe that internally feels like they're up for the task, they could propose that and you can just do a direct sale to them. Mm-hmm. The other way to do it is also seller financing. So as the founder, mm-hmm. you can actually finance the sale of the business to your employees by providing a loan essentially to them for them to purchase the business. And this is really great because sometimes funding can get a little tricky and you can actually be the finance person behind kind of selling this company over time, giving them the option to be able to buy it without having to have a whole bunch of capital already yep. ready mm-hmm. to purchase the business outright. Mm-hmm. And the last option here is stock options. So as the founder, you can always issue stock options to your key employees as a form of ownership to the business. This allows the employees to earn the shares over time as they meet performance targets and, you know, milestones. So a little bit, sounds almost a little similar to the ESOP, definitely just very different. There's a lot of factors to it why it's different, but it is another option that is, you know, popularly being used, probably in Silicon Valley as much, but mm-hmm. probably see the stock options more in commercial world that's mm-hmm. non-Silicon Valley-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to speak to the seller financing, I also find that to be popular with selling to your children as well.
That is very true. Mm-hmm. You are right. So that gets on to the second point here, which is, all right, circumstance number two, now you want to sell to maybe your kids. Mm-hmm. Okay, so one way you can do it, and an option as you can think about, is gifting, right? There is a way of transferring ownership of the business to your kids through gifting. And so you basically gift the shares of your business to your children, either over time or all at once. There can be a tax-efficient way of doing this, although I would say talk to your CPA, make sure you understand Absolutely. All the implications of this, because there are definitely limits and exceptions and mm-hmm. all those lovely things, you know, that IRS has rules on. So you just want to make sure that you don't end up, you know, accidentally triggering some kind of tax implication and not realizing it. But mm-hmm. gifting is one way to basically gift the business to your kids. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, definitely talk to your CPA, because if you have a certain revenue level or if you have multiple locations, yes. it might start to make things a little complicated.
Yes. Now, of course, just like to your employees, you can also sell it directly to your kids at fair market value. So a lot of times it's very popular to kind of structure some kind of installment sale to your kids so that they can pay you over time as you probably transition out of the company as well. Then you can also have a buy-sell agreement. So a buy-sell agreement is a legal contract that outlines the future terms of a future sale. So as the founder, you can enter into a buy-sell agreement with your kids, which outlines the conditions of when the sale can occur with them, who can buy the business, and at what price the business can be purchased at some kind of event, which is typically probably your retirement or, hate to say it, your death. Fun. It's going to happen sometime to all of us.
Yeah, but you know what? It's good to have something like that in regardless of how you sell your company. There should still be something like that in your will, because I don't have this as part of our talk next, but a friend of mine, the company just they had several locations. The main owners, the brothers, both passed away, and then the family started to fight over who had what level of ownership, because there was one brother's family and then the other brother's family.
That's a good point. Yes.
And then there was a wife, and there was an ex-wife, and there was a new wife. I mean, it was a mess. So
I think no matter how you want to exit, even if you haven't thought about exiting, let's just admit it, the exit's coming, whether you want it or not, right? So I think to your point is you got to have some kind of succession planning already built in now. Even if you change it later, that's fine.
Yeah.
But does it say in an event of something happening that is completely out of everybody's, you know, mm-hmm. timeline? You're not kind of leaving a mess because you yeah. have this big fortune, this big company, and now nobody's clear as to what the ownership is and the terms of buying and selling and all that fun stuff. So
yep.
absolutely, you should have something like that in there. Mm-hmm. So option number four is called a family limited partnership, also commonly referred to as a flip. A flip is a legal structure that allows you as the founder to transfer ownership of the business to your kids while still maintaining control over the business. So you can transfer the ownership to the flip itself, which is then owned by the kids as limited partners. And so because of that, you get to retain control as a general partner, which this is new to me. I've never actually heard something like this before, but I thought that was kind of neat. Mm-hmm. And of course, just like the same option you have when trying to sell to your employees, selling to your kids, you can also do an ESOP program, especially if you are going to pass this off to your kids, most people hire their kids into positions in the company to mm-hmm. kind of as a way of getting them to know the company and groom them up. So most likely they're already an employee of the company, and you can use the ESOP to essentially start passing off ownership. Mm-hmm. So then last but not least, let's talk about when you are probably ideally wanting to sell the business to your employer or your children, but you kind of want to retain ownership for some time. Maybe they're not ready. Maybe you're not ready. I don't know what the problem is, mm-hmm. but hey, let's just admit it. Like, let's say you're not ready to retire, or maybe like your children or your child or your employees just aren't quite of that entrepreneurial mindset yet, right? So, you know, working in a company versus actually running it and being an entrepreneur and growing and taking the company to the next level, that takes some time to groom. Not everybody's just a natural in that. And mm-hmm. maybe you want to stick around for some time and show them the way of how to do it, basically mentor them and just groom them up. Mm-hmm. It's you know, these are a few options that you can consider. So one, appoint your key employee, or, you know, the person who's ready to take over next, or your child as CEO or the general manager of your business. This is a great way for them to start taking over the day-to-day, so you can start stepping back, but then you still maintain control, so you're still making major business decisions or whatnot, and essentially making sure they don't accidentally go off the rails, because yeah. they're new to the job, so what did you expect, right? you know something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Number two is you can establish a board of directors. So the board of directors, and then you can appoint, well, certainly yourself at some point, or certainly appoint your child or a key member of the company as a member of the board. Now, the board can provide oversight and guidance to the business, and it allows, again, you as the founder to step back from the day-to-day. And this is also a great place for the founder to eventually also transition back one extra step before retirement to have a seat on the board.
And to that point, if you have multiple children and you had to choose, let's say you have three children that would love to run the company, but you really can't, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, you can only have one to run it, you may want to establish a board of directors that has all of your children in it. And
it's like an episode of Succession. Have you seen Succession?
I have.
It's like an episode of Succession,
kind of
basically.
It's like Succession, yeah. But not as fun.
Well, I don't know if I call that fun, stress-inducing, heart attack.
I know. But it's true. I mean, I you know, real world situations where dad starts a company, creates a multi-million dollar business, now has a board of directors, has four children in this case. All four children are on the board. Each child has some responsibility of some sort because all four children are great business people. So,
wow, I really hit gold there. All four of them are great business
absolutely
people.
Great business people. And so all four children have some have some leverage on what the other child, so that there's no like dictatorship, if you will. And one child doesn't make decisions on the company, on the family business, that maybe doesn't serve the purpose of the rest of the family, because I'm going to get into it when I talk, mm-hmm. when I start talking,
yeah.
But we're going to talk about income, like family income and future income, because that's essentially what it boils down to when you're going to, you know, make one of your children an heir.
Yeah, family and money. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a fun topic.
Totally.
So the third option is also implementing a voting trust. So a voting trust is basically a legal agreement that allows you as the founder to transfer shares, your shares, into that trust. And then you can appoint a trustee or to vote on behalf of the shares. Now, this is also something you can do by appointing your child as a trustee or maybe your key employee, and it allows them to kind of make decisions on behalf of the majority shares while you as the founder can still retain ownership. So it's mm-hmm. kind of a nifty little mm-hmm. Little workaround there.
Yep.
Option number four is sell non-voting shares. So as the founder, you can sell non-voting shares of your business to your child or your key employee, and you can still retain a majority of voting shares. Hmm. So this allows your child or employee to have the ownership stake in the business, but you still maintain control because you have the majority of the voting shares. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, in the same situation as before, you can also create a flip family limited partnership that we went over before, basically allows you to still maintain control, but start passing off some shares over to your child or employee. So those are a few options of what you can think about if you're thinking about doing this. At least know what's at your disposal, I suppose. I'm not saying that, of course, we're saying that you should talk to professionals, meaning
for sure.
Your CPA, your lawyer, your estate planning, whatever, you know, whoever your trusted board of advisors are, to really decide which road to go down. But I think one of the things that are helpful is to start is just at least know what your options are. Mm-hmm. So you don't feel like you're just, oh, I just need to gift it to my kid. Well, you don't really have to. You know, there's a lot of other options that you can play with for mm-hmm. that.
I would also say that I just realized that I didn't talk about this I won't be sharing this. So I'm going to share this now.
Okay.
I kind of feel like this is something that you don't have to think about when you start your company. This is something you need to think about when you have had your company somewhere between 10 and 15 years, somewhere in that realm, 10, 15, 20 years. I wouldn't go beyond 20 years of ownership, but when you're somewhere in that sweet spot of 10 to 15, you're at this point smooth sailing. You're probably still growing, but you've kind of gotten all your wiggles out, if you will. You know, so you likely have a pretty good idea of what you want, a pretty good sense of what you want, and you know how much you have, by then, right?
Yeah, that at that point too, I feel like if an owner has kids that they're considering possibly, mm-hmm. maybe they're tossing up between kids or employees, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At that point, at least, you know, your child has grown up enough that you're starting to see, you know, does he or her have the potential to take over? Do I have employees who have the potential to take over? Maybe you don't, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe your employees are, maybe the power in your business is so centralized to you mm-hmm. that you maybe haven't fostered any, like, employees that has the leadership or entrepreneurship qualities to be able to take over in your stead. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think at that point, about 10, 15 years, you have enough information at your mm-hmm. fingertips to actually make a good decision about how you want to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Because it does generally take about 5 years, whether you're selling it externally or internally, to prepare your company for sale.
That's
true. So if you're looking at, I mean,
that's on average.
In average, yeah. So, and if you're planning to bring your child in to raise them up the ranks, you know, you just want to make sure that you give yourself enough time.
Agreed.
So in saying that, selling your company to someone in your family or internally, whatever it may be, it can be a complex process that requires careful planning and execution. I've seen takeovers that have been great and some that have ruined relationships. Now, this is an important episode to me because I'm hoping that either one of my kids or someone I know will eventually take over the company when I'm ready to move on, or I'm just going to get buried with it. I don't know. It's a toss-up. So I recognize that it's tricky, and hopefully you do too, which is why you're here. So what do you do to ensure that you're happy, they're happy, and the sale is clean and drama-free? First, you got to identify the potential buyer within your company or family who has the skills and experience to run the business successfully, or rather, in my opinion, better than you.
Yeah, one can hope.
Yeah, right? One can better hope. Than you. Like that to me is the ultimate way to get a company to sustain and maintain, is to ensure that whoever's taking it over is going to do better than you did. You got to consider the financial capabilities and willingness to take on the responsibility of ownership. So speaking of family, just because they're related to you doesn't mean they inherently know how to run a business, much less yours. Don't just sell it to family.
It doesn't go through DNA? No.
One would think, but not necessarily.
Darn.
No, right? Don't just sell it to family or give gift to family because you think that's what you should do or what they should do, or that it's their right.
Yeah,
their
birthright. Birthright, yeah. No.
No, only do it mm-hmm. if it makes sense. You don't want to be so, I think, nepotistic. Is that the word?
Is that a real word, nepotistic?
I'm going to go with it.
Okay.
I say it is.
It is as of today.
Yeah, that you don't, that you have blinders on and you don't see the potential of your, of whomever it is that you're in your family.
Or the lack of potential.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're selling a business in the end, not a child. And you're selling it to a new business owner, not a child. So next, establish a fair value. Consider factors such as your company's financial performance, assets, liabilities, the market trends, and future growth potential. Try not to get too emotional here either. All of this has got to be completely disconnected from your emotions. And if you don't feel like you can disconnect your emotions, this is not a good idea for you. Maybe not right now. Let's try again in a few years. To be frank, this goes for both internal and external sales. Be fair. Remove your opinion from the equation. So what am I saying here? I'm saying not everybody owns a multi-million-dollar worthy company. Okay. Some of us own businesses that are less than $1 million and a whole lot less worth $1 million. So don't overvalue your business. Be fair about it. Because if you're not being fair about it, you're really being unfair to everyone involved. Develop a business plan that outlines your company's current status, the future goals, and growth strategy. But put in details you know your planned heir will understand. You are at an advantage here. You already know who will take over when you're gone, and this is your opportunity to share insight, nuances, and your company's personality with them. If your staff is staying with the company, you should also share insight and nuances on them and the culture of your business and your relationship with them too. So, as you mentioned, it's a good idea to bring, we're going to use a child for this hypothetical situation. You do want to have your child work for you and your company for at least a little while so that they can get used to the culture, get used to those nuances, better understand who they're going to be working with, create relationships with your employees, especially if you have longtime employees. You want to be sensitive to them. You don't necessarily want your child to come in and be like, everybody's fired. Right? Because that's not a good look.
It's a popular way to a lot of times people rotate them through the company. So mm-hmm. every single position, so they get to work from the bottom up.
Yep. Yeah. That's my strategy, or rather the strategy that I'll be using mm-hmm. because yeah. you want your child to see what it's like to be in every position.
And they need to prove themselves. Oh, right?
For sure. For sure. But here you've also got an advantage where you can speak to them. I guess in my case, mother to child, like, hey, this person here, they've got a lot going on in their lives. They don't usually respond to me in less than 24 hours. So just know that if you're planning on keeping them and you don't hear from them, this is the reason why, or, you know, whatever it is. I don't feel like you could necessarily have that kind of conversation with somebody who's externally purchasing your company.
You can. And also those kind of information isn't documented anywhere, right?
No.
For nobody, it's these little nuances of the business, like the day-to-day, that you can't quite glean from any kind of SOPs or written documentation or anything. Even just, you kind of have to live and breathe the company to see it, understand it, and ask the questions about it. So yes.
It's like personality process, I guess, or the process behind personalities.
It's the people that makes it complicated. Yay. But yes, the little quirks and differences that are created in your company due to the various people you hire, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. it's important to know that because that's what makes up your culture.
Absolutely. Negotiate the terms of the sale, including the purchase price, payment terms, and any contingencies such as financing or due diligence. This can easily become an emotional step, and things can slide down pretty quickly if not approached appropriately. It is essential to be transparent and fair in your negotiation to ensure a successful sale and maintain good relationships. What I'm saying here is don't just sell it to your kid because you love them and they're just so cute when they're sitting in their office chair, like cute little CEO. No, you're going to be fair as though you are not related, right? Don't look them in the eye.
Don't look them in the eye.
Don't look them in the eye because then you'll be like, oh, but mommy loves you. No, mommy loves you, but mom's also not going to get janked. This is a good, I was trying to think of a.
Don't mess this up. Word. Don't mess this up, child.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yes, pretty much. This is also a good time to seek legal and financial advice from professionals that are not and have not been involved with you or your heir. Both professionals can also cling to emotional ties, especially if they've been with you and or your family for a long time. Maybe you think that your son is going to be the greatest owner of your or successor behind you, but maybe your CPA is like, he's an idiot, he's a doofus, I don't think this is a great idea. They might end up blocking you every step of the way. It has happened. I have seen it happen. Just make it difficult. It's best to just use somebody you've never used before. You're going to want to do this because this will ensure that the sale process is legal, it meets all regulatory requirements, and that it's fair. You'll need to hire someone new, but let your current providers know so that they don't think that they are being replaced, unless they are. Communicate the sale to your employees and customers to ensure a smooth transition. People don't like change. People don't like change, and yet they keep saying they do. I think that's a huge lie. Nobody wants change.
Well, especially if you're talking about the top, you know, the captain of the ship, right?
Oh, like, yeah. It's like
that makes people nervous.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like your parents are getting divorced and dad just showed up with a new girlfriend. No, you this is not my new mommy. That's exactly what it ends up turning into. So you also don't want them. You don't want to lose your clients. You don't want to lose your clientele. You want to keep the same culture because you don't want your child to fail. You don't want your whomever it is that you're selling it to fail. Because, I mean, there's no point to that.
You work this hard to make sure it doesn't fail.
Absolutely. So. Don't walk out the door throwing a grenade behind you.
Not a Van Damme movie.
No.
Okay.
Provide clear information on the new ownership structure, management team, and any changes that are going to be coming into the business strategy. From here, you say goodbye and good luck.
Yeah.
Adios. And move on to the next. Unless the terms of your sale are for you to stay on in some capacity. In the end, when a sale happens within the family, it's less a sale and more a takeover, with guidelines, of course. But then, in some cases, the parent, let's just go with parent here, can't seem to let go. And the new owner, their child, have autonomy. I know, believe me. I know how hard it can be to trust someone you literally had to teach how to use a toilet. But there's a reason you chose this child of yours, who is now a very capable grown-up, to take over your prized possession, your business. Trust you made the right choice. Trust they will do fine. And if they don't, it's not your problem anymore. So.
Wow. Hitting a little close to home, are we?
Just a touch. Yeah. So I have seen this professionally. And we're going to get into that in the raw truth. But I have seen these things go well and not so well. Because so much emotion is involved.
Well, probably correlates to the amount of money that's involved as well.
Oh, for sure. Would you say that emotion is as much of an issue when you're selling it, say, to your employees, as opposed to selling it to your children?
Oh, well, that's a good one. Yeah, actually, I would, because usually if you're going to sell it to your employees, these are employees who've been with you for some time, right? So we're talking about more than a few days, more than a few months, definitely a handful of years.
Maybe even from the beginning.
And if you think about how much time you spend working, you probably spend more time with them than you probably do with your family on average, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're constantly at work, you probably have more touch points, more connections with them. Over the years, you've probably gotten to know them and their families and stuff like that. So in a sense, I feel like there's a lot of emotions entangled that as well. I think it is a lot easier to get your, like, you cloud your judgment with your child, right? Because it's, I mean, the bond of raising a child, like you said, from teaching them how to use the toilet to all these, like, things that made them apart, like, I think that clouds your judgment. And sometimes parents, and again, I'm not one, so don't come after me for my opinion, but
come at me.
You tell me if this is completely out of line. But I think that sometimes parents overestimate the potential of their child because of that.
100%.
Because they've seen them grow up, all these little milestones along the way, and they so wish and want their child to be a certain way. And sometimes they're just, funny enough, I feel like parents who actually really want their kids to be a certain way, they usually get kids who are the complete opposite. Not that it's a bad thing. It's just, you know, hey, I want my kid to take over my business. No, your child kind of wants to be a dancer and artist.
Right.
And that's the thing, is I think it makes it really hard for the relationship on both sides. And I think it's a lot easier for parents to misjudge that when it comes to their child versus their employee who they met on a professional capacity, who was a formerly like a, you know, fully functional adult when they met them too. So I think that's where I think the emotions are different, but I would say relatively the same, like as far as intensity.
Right. That was exactly what I was trying to say with my nepotistic word. Sometimes the nepotism does take over, and just because you have a child that could take over doesn't mean that they should take over.
And they may not want to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've definitely had positions where friends who have a great opportunity to take over their parents' business, but it's not them. It's not what they want to do. They can't see themselves in that role. They don't want to do it, but, you know, the parents are like, oh, but you're my only son. And well, okay, what do you want me to do about that? Like,
or they fail at whatever it is what they were doing before, and you're like, well, you got to be able to make money somehow, so I'll just sell you my business. How about them apples? And, and it's like, no, that's terrible. Don't do that. And you know, like, you might ask yourself, well, what does it matter if it's not my business anymore, right? Like, what was the point of me starting this business if I wasn't going to maybe give it to my child? I don't care what they do with it. I kind of feel like you should. Do you feel like you should care what they do with it?
What do you mean? Like,
I don't mean care like you care so much that you are physically involved in the things that they do and you can't let them go, because that's a problem in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if you should care that they become successful. Am I making sense?
I don't know. What you're trying to say.
I'm trying to say, like, you know, I know some parents who will gift the company to their children without any care whether or not that child becomes successful, more successful than them. Sometimes the kid does not become more successful than them. And the parent still ends up saving the day over and over and over again. Not because they want to, but because they don't, there's no other choice for them.
And that's the thing, is, and this is where I think my lack of parenting experience kind of comes in. It's easier for me to say this. I don't know if done in practice is that the same. But to be quite honest, I think if your child is old enough for you to gift them your business, especially if they're, you know, let's just say over the age of 25, we'll give or take a few years there, right? Over the age of 25, look, they're an adult. They got to sink or swim. They got to have to learn from the success and failures. It is what it is, right? Like they got to figure it out for themselves. And honestly, as I think that if you gift the business and then you create a safety net where they feel like whenever they're close to failing or they might fail and the parents will come in and swoop in and save the day, I just feel like you're almost enabling them to never really learn to be the entrepreneur. Maybe they have the potential to be, right? Sometimes these qualities don't exhibit themselves unless you're in a situation for them to realize that they have the ability to do this. And that's kind of how I feel about it. But like I said, I think it might be a little harder in practice because I would imagine watching your child fail and hurt and be hurt and feel bad and, you know, maybe go through like very negative emotions for a long period. I mean, that's hard to watch as a parent, right?
Oh, yeah, it is.
So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if should is the right word. Maybe, of course, you care. You probably do care. But whether or not you want to act on that caring versus saying, you know what, when he or she fails, I will be here to make sure that I can console them, but they need to go through the process themselves. They need to go through the obstacles and the learning challenges themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this brings us back to make sure you're ready. You need to make sure you're emotionally prepared for this.
No matter how you exit, just know you have to be prepared, right? Whether you sell it externally, internally, you better be prepared to let it go.
Let it go. So now we're
going to... No, we're not breaking out into song. No. Let's move on to the next section.
The raw truth. Let's get to the raw truth, where we each share our own gritty experience with today's topic. We want you, the listeners, to know that success isn't easy, it's not pretty, and it's certainly not a straight line. We hope you will hear our cautionary tales and learn from them.
Yeah, so... I'm not going to review. So first of all, I think business and family never mix. Okay. So maybe that's why I've always been kind of predisposed to selling to third parties, because I just feel like I would never hire a family member. I would never want to like partner with a family member. I would it's just me. I don't care. Cousins, distant cousins, you know, siblings, I don't care. I just feel like it gets really complicated when it becomes family. So you know, if and when I have a child, probably would not consider them unless they really want it later on. But that would not be my first go-to, right? But I mean, maybe that's also because, you know, subconsciously I've heard, you know, bad stories about it, right? And so without going into any like detail and names, because hey, nobody wants their laundry like aired
out
there.
Yeah, protect the guilty.
But yeah, exactly. So let's just say we have family friends, right? Who have very successful business. Like we're talking like multi-million, like these, you know, not like succession, like not that level or anything like that, but still like nothing to sneer at in this day and age. And they had one child. No, I should know. They had two kids, a boy and a girl. And let's just put it out there. They're also Asian. So, haha. So they naturally felt that the business should be inherited by the boy, right? But the boy was, he, you know, just wasn't of a business mind, right? He was a very successful, I forgot what he did, like architecture or something like that. It's a little bit more
not the same.
Career driven and mm-hmm. focused and really enjoy the task versus being kind of more of like this big old like visionary and like, you know, motivating and driving a business forward and stuff like that. And for years, the parents have always just focused on him as the person to like take over, and he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't have the knack for it. He doesn't even want to. It probably makes him miserable. And all the while, the daughter, you know, actually has a knack for it, right? Enjoys doing that kind of stuff, but you know, kind of is kind of overlooked a little bit in that sense. And eventually it all worked out, because eventually the business went to the daughter.
Oh, good.
Right. It kind of like all worked out toward the end of the day. But that's what I mean by, I think like judgment gets clouded easier mm-hmm. by culture, by experience, by whatever the case may be. Right. I mean, it just is. And I think that ends up straining family relationships. Mm-hmm. Right, really badly. And I just feel like when there's business, there's family, when there's money, when there's family, like I rarely have ever seen a situation turn out like, yeah, so good. Everybody's so happy without like years of fighting, right? So that's kind of like my personal raw truth about that.
I can't help but smile because I'm Armenian. And in the Armenian world, if you didn't hear by now, I'm Armenian. In the Armenian world, we have a lot, most of us own businesses, and we have always, like, for thousands of years, we've been business owners, right? Like, that's just what we do. And we always, you know, pass the businesses down. That is just what we do. When you're going to go get your first job, you work for family. If you're not working for family, you're working for a family friend. I have the exact opposite, experience.
That's good.
I think that, and it's funny because in our culture, like if a family starts to like fight, or if they start having like issues, we're like, they just didn't know how to raise their kids.
We definitely back smack talk.
But we smack talk about like, if your kid wasn't able to run your business, or you're having like, you're butting heads because of your business, it has a lot to do with the way that you raised your child and not necessarily like your business acumen, which I think is
no, nice. We're pretty that much judgmental in the Asian culture as well. Pretty awesome. Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot in common. what I have always experienced is that when the child takes over the business from the parent, at least all these years that, you know, a lot of my family owned businesses, and then my uncles had them, then my cousins took them over. Now their children are taking it over. So now we're at our third generation of taking businesses over. The business just keeps getting better in my experience. And plus, like I said, in all the Armenians that I know that own businesses, and then they give it to their child makes it better. So a lot of time they pivot the business so that it fits them. It's so ingrained into our culture that that's just, owning a business is part of our culture.
Is the parents okay with the pivots?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, totally.
As long as it makes money.
yeah. As long as it makes money. And a lot of times the money is something that it's like, I think that's why I run my company the way I do, where it's like this circle that feeds itself. Mm-hmm. Because that's how in Armenian culture, it's a circle that feeds itself. You're feeding the economy, you're feeding the local industry, you're feeding your family, you're supporting, you're being a good human, not just a human, not just a citizen, you're being a good human. Mm-hmm. That's what a human is supposed to do. So it's kind of ingrained into the Western Armenian culture. So I can't say that I have a gritty tale of my own to give, but I do have one that I'm adjacent to that I will use. I'm going to change some details here. Like I said, so there was a man who wanted to retire, and we assisted him for the first 3 years of getting the company prepared for his son to take over.
Okay.
His son was very qualified.
Business savvy.
Very, very qualified to take over this business. The kid had grown up in the business, had worked inside of the business.
Oh, nice. Okay.
They had two locations. I keep calling him a kid. He wasn't a kid. He was in his 30s at this point, but whatever. He's a kid to me. If you're at an age where I could have babysat you, you're a kid. anyway, so they had two locations. Dad was running one location and kid was running the other location. And, so kid knew what to do, right? Here we are in year three. Everything is ready to go. Transfer is done. Dad and mom retired to Florida.
Sounds like a success story.
But it's not.
Okay.
Because dad decided that he was just going to keep saying, hey, what are you doing?
See what I mean?
What are you doing? What? Oh, well, I would never do it like that. I would never. Oh, you shouldn't do it like that. For 2 years, we put up with this guy. Finally, I had to let them go because I couldn't take it anymore. But this guy would not let his son just do what he wanted to do. Son had ideas. Son wanted to do, he wanted to pivot. He wanted to change things. There were some things he was going to change. Son planned on firing a deadweight employee that had been with the company for a long time. Dad's drinking buddy. Dad's like, what the heck are you doing? Don't fire him. It was it's a trades industry. So, you know, there was like, oh my God, it turned into a freaking mess. So much so that by the time that we left, I think that was the same time the son decided he was leaving.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. See what I mean?
Yep.
Strained family relationship.
Son was like, I am done. I'm out of here. Stop controlling me. Yeah. If I can't run this business, then screw it. I'm going to start my own business.
Right. Of course.
And I heard later on that dad's business ended up folding.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't find another person to buy it. And it was a freaking nightmare. So, you know, sometimes you do have a child, but you know, you have those situations where sometimes the child is the one who's like, come help me, please. But sometimes it's like the parent who
can't
like,
let go.
Can't let go.
Yeah.
And it's not always a parent situation, right? Even if it's you're selling to your employer.
Well, yeah, probably the same thing. It's more of just your inability to let go, right? Because most people a lot of people, and I think we talked about in the last episode too, or maybe the episode before, I don't know, but you don't always understand how closely tied your identity is to your business as a business owner until you lose the identity, meaning you all of a sudden don't have a business, right? You're not the owner of anything once you're retired, even if you sell it, right? Regardless in which any case. And so my personal experience from like a previous Raw Truth was I thought I was prepared. I didn't even realize for that. I wasn't prepared for that loss of identity either. Even I thought I was. So I can only imagine for somebody who thought, oh, I'm selling it to my child. You know, they never thought that, look, selling it to my child still means that I am no longer the owner of the business. That is not my identity anymore. I'm just retired.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard because then you're left with, well, who am I? And then you keep wanting to figure out like getting back to that familiarity that you knew before, which is, you know, why you're probably looking over your kid's shoulder going, hey, what are you doing? Why are you doing it that way? I know better. Why would you do it my way?
Yeah. Which is
crazy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and we've mentioned this in the last episode. I didn't really mention it in this episode, but I should say that we are skimming the surface of what it is to sell your business. There are so many other things that go along with selling it that we could just be a podcast about selling your business. So that's why we are really focusing on what an external sale could look like, what it could look like. Our next episode will kind of complete the series on, you know, what happens after the sale. So just know that there's a lot more to this than what we're talking about, but we're really hitting on the big subjects or the big topics, I guess.
Yes.
Big points.
Great. Big points, yes, because otherwise you will be here forever. And
absolutely.
This will be like a Joe Rogan style show. If like it goes on for like 4 hours. And
4 hours. I can't walk that much. No. I would be like Forrest Gump. Where am I? Ohio? No. So I guess that's kind of my disclaimer because I don't want you guys to think that this is all there is to selling a business. It really isn't. These are the big parts of things that we want you to keep in mind when selling your business. And it's not the kind of stuff that they necessarily talk to you about when you're sitting there in front of your CPA or your agent or your attorney. They don't always share the business behind it, right?
You mean the business behind the small business?
No, I do.
Well placed.
Yeah, totally.
Okay,
so anyway, we're going to move on. And in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. Now, this is where we're revealing the dots between the living room startup and the success story on the cover of Forbes. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history. And sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion.
Okay, my famous example today is Dame Stephanie Shirley.
Mm.
You ever heard of her?
Heck yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm not going to keep saying Dame Stephanie Shirley. So yeah. She, Shirley, was a business, is, not was, sorry, yeah. she's, still alive, but oh my God, she is a businesswoman, a technology entrepreneur, and really a philanthropist today. Currently at the age of 89 years old. I think she's 89 now. I may have gotten that a couple of years back. She's had a long, long career of championing women in the workplace and new forms of technology, including being part of the team that programmed Concorde's black box flight recorder, which back in the day, that was kind of a big deal.
Still kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it is. I think half the people listening, like especially the kids, are probably like, what the hell is the Concorde?
I didn't know anything.
Yes. Sorry. Yes. But if you're wondering about the Concorde, History This Week has a great little episode about the flight of the Concorde. You should see that.
Oh, cool.
So after being born in Germany, Stephanie Shirley was brought over to the UK on the Kinder transport during World War II, and she lived with foster parents for many, many years. She had a pretty turbulent childhood. And that really shaped her life and career, teaching her how valuable life is and making her determined to do something good every day. Stephanie Shirley went on and found an all-woman software company that pioneered remote work and redefined expectations and opportunities of working women at that time. I'm going to get to what that time is in a second. Mm-hmm. Okay. But part of this is she was also really concerned about the future of her business and the welfare of her employees in the event of her death and retirement. So to address these concerns, she actually put into place an employee ESOP program. She started the process in 1974. So now you understand, right? So she was pioneering stuff in the 60s and 70s, right? Really kind of crazy when you think about it. All woman, way beyond technology company, like in the 60s, 70s, and a remote work too, which we thought that was a new thing coming out of COVID, but hey, she was way ahead of us. So anyway, so she implemented the ESOP program in 1974, took her about 10 years in 1985, and then for the employees to actually acquire a major stake in the company. There's a lot of nuances and details to why it took probably close. I think at the end of the day, it took anywhere from like 10 to 15 years from when she kind of thought about the program to when it actually worked out. So the ESOP program allowed the employees to acquire the shares. And then over time, the funds of the shares were being provided from the company's profits. And so the sale to the employees was actually structured that way. So that Shirley can actually retain like a small stake in a company and still be involved as a consultant and ambassador to the business. Really smart lady. And you know, of course, for the employees, this was like a meaningful stake in a company. I mean, at some point they own majority shares, which gave them a great sense of ownership and commitment to the business, which is what we were talking about earlier. This also, you know, allows Shirley to, you know, make sure there's a way to kind of continue the business on. Now, the great news is that in year 2000, which, by the way, blew my mind, the fact that the business was around in 2000. I don't know why. I'm just amazed. By year 2000, her company, which is called the Freelance Programmers, based in the UK, I believe, was valued at $3 billion with a B. And when it was acquired in 2001, it ended up making 70 of her staff millionaires because of the ESOP program. So it sounds a lot easier on paper than it was actually said and done. As you would imagine, back in those days, women couldn't even open a bank account without having a male relative present. So she took, and like other things that she went up against, for example, Stephanie Shirley was often goes by Steve Shirley, right, rather than Stephanie, because she realized using her own name didn't improve the credibility in a male-dominated world of IT. Just imagine being a female in a world of IT back in the day.
Just being a woman in any industry.
In the 60s? Industry. To start your own business, hire all women, and then, like, try to, like, do this, like, programming that was all done by men.
You say that, but it's still difficult today.
It is. It's still difficult today. I'm just saying, like, imagine back in the 60s. Wow, right? So she says, funny enough, she had this little quote, which I thought was pretty interesting. She's doing all this very, you know, pioneering stuff, like doing IT in a men's world and, like, in an area where it's hard for you to even start your own business as a woman. But she acknowledges that she was actually pretty terrible at the finance side of things. Which actually held her back. And she says, I quote, "I was scared of money. I don't think it was about undervaluing the work. It was just sheer ignorance. I thought that it was quite acceptable to buy a unit of labor for a pound and sell it for a pound 50. And it just didn't work. And it actually took her 25 years before she actually appointed a finance director. But I love that quote because, I mean, $3 billion company, like, wow, right? Yeah. But, you know, even with somebody who had that, like, she herself had this innate fear of finance, which I hear now with women all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant absolutely. Business owners, brilliant entrepreneurs, brilliant what they do, for some reason, just melt when anything about numbers or finance or accounting is discussed. Right? Like, it's so amazing, right? And like...
Me, absolutely me.
Right, yeah. Like, you know, you want to talk about financial reporting. There's a lot of women business owners who just don't want to understand the P&L or the balance sheet. I mean, we're forced into it by nature and career. But I will say that until recent, you know, I was completely intimidated by anything finance.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, no, I have no problem reading my own reports.
Yeah.
I have no problem reading my client reports. Yeah. I am not a problem with any of that stuff. The minute my husband says, can you pay this bill? I'm like, I gotta call somebody. I gotta pay a bill. How much do we owe? Well, what if I gotta set up a payment plan? I don't want to do this. You do it. You know, like it's crazy. Like I could do it. I know how to do it. I just don't want to do it. I get all kinds of like, I get hives when it comes to me.
You know, I get so intimidated by, and it's silly because the amount of things I've done in Excel, what I can do, like, I don't even know why, but I have this like shut off valve in my head for some reason when it comes to finance. So you tell me to, you know, project stuff and like calculate interest and, mm-hmm. you know, compare investments. For some reason, my brain just shuts down. There's a stupid button that goes on and I just, you know, can't do it. Right.
You've been programmed that way. That's why.
And so when she said this, I was like, I completely feel you. Mm-hmm. Right. But the great thing is she does go on. She does go on to become one of the richest women in Britain, ranking third in the Sunday Times Rich List, which is probably their Forbes list over there, over in the UK, behind the Queen. Mm-hmm. And since, quote unquote, retiring her work from her work, she's been really into philanthropy with a particular focus on autism and IT, largely motivated by her late son, Giles, who had severe autism. While she was building the company, by the way, people, you know, just saying. And of course, her love for business in IT, the business she built. So,
yes, she's amazing.
Amazing. And I don't think a lot of people actually know about her very much. But I love the fact that she had to sign her letters, Steve, because Stephanie wasn't making it through the door. But once she started signing Steve, she was actually getting responses, which is, look, cold hard truth of the facts of those days.
Oh, for sure. Well, this is an unnecessary connection, but my cat's name is Stevie. And when I'm upset with her, I call her Stephanie. Because her name's Stephanie. Stevie. Steve. Get it? Anyway. Anyway, as I mentioned earlier.
What in this water?
I know. I'm out of water now, so now I'm getting delirious. As I mentioned earlier, it's kind of a given in Armenian culture to take over the family business and then pass it on to your children, so on and so forth. There's a strong sense of responsibility and respect in business, especially in Armenian business, and especially in Western Armenians, who have for centuries been business owners in some capacity or another. Such is the case for the Zildjian family. You ever heard of them? Literally. According to the family's history, their ancestor, Avedis the First, which is my father's name and my son's middle name, was an alchemist who found that an alloy of copper, tin, and silver created a metal with musical properties. Osman II, the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire at the time, brought Avedis to his place to make cymbals for the Sultan's elite bands. The Sultan gave Avedis the name Zildjian, an Armenian word meaning son of a cymbal maker, which was very common in the Ottoman Empire for them to change an Armenian name, a Syrian name or Greek name, to fit the area. The alloy remains a family secret. Avedis was released from the palace in 1623 and was given permission to start his own cymbal making business. The rest is history. A very, very long history. It would be five generations before the company and family would move to the United States. Avedis Zildjian III immigrated to the U.S. in 1909 thankfully, before the genocide. Mm-hmm. He worked at a candy factory, and soon he owned one of his own. In 1927, Avidis's uncle Aram was running the business, running the symbol business in Constantinople. He told Avidis that it was his turn to take over, meaning, hey, buddy, come back to Constantinople and take over the business. I'm ready to retire. According to the history on the company's website, Avidis III was reluctant to take on the company, which had never been very profitable, at least not for him. It made money, but not like a ton of money. He convinced his uncle to move the business to America in 1929. Avidis III kind of felt like they would be better off in the U.S. Maybe they'll have better sales. Over the years, the company would survive the Great Depression, a fire that destroyed the original manufacturing facility in Massachusetts, and more. During this time, Avidis revolutionized cymbals by creating and naming the hi-hat, sizzle, and crash. Ba-dum-bum-ch-ha. Get it? That's literally what it was. These cymbals were thinner than the original design and were embraced by big bands. The company is now in the hands of the 15th generation of Zildjians and is still going strong. Arguably the longest running family-owned business in the world.
That's pretty amazing. I have never known any of that.
No, yeah, no, I know.
That's very nice.
It's
well done.
Something I'm supposed to know. It's part of being, it's my Armenianism. there's a saying that goes, put your money where your mouth is. And we're drilling down a bit further here to connect what we've discussed at a granular level to tangible sources you can take to get to that next level.
So I would definitely recommend Dame Stephanie Shirley's book, appropriately titled Let It Go.
I love it.
Let It Go.
I would just like to say that every time you say Let It Go, that song pops up into my head.
That's what I keep saying. I was like, we're not breaking out of songs. But Let It Go is the name of her book. She also has another book, which I can't remember the name of. But that book I read, and it particularly goes through basically her building. It's a memoir, too. I think mm-hmm. it's actually, yeah. And it takes through her life and going through and building the company and really from her own words and perspective, what it all felt like and the things that she ran into and things she succeeded at, things she did not succeed at. Hmm. It's a very enlightening book and pretty well written in my opinion, at least. Other than that, like the only great recommendation I would say is that, again, no matter which direction you choose to exit your business, one, think about the exit. Yes, it may take you 5 years to really solidify your plan of which way you want to exit. But, I'm always at the school of thought, you want to start at the end of mind. Think about your exit in the beginning mm-hmm. And what that would look like, because that goes a lot into driving your business, what kind of business you want to build, because you don't want to put your blood, sweat, and tears into something for 5 years and then realize you built something that's not going to get you to how you want to exit.
Totally.
Right? Like, that's like, you can't get time back. Mm-hmm. So I would say think about it early, make sure you have an exit. And then when you are ready to put in the concrete steps, or you're approaching that time where you want to put in steps, whether it is to exit externally, you want to exit and give it to or gift it or sell it to your kids or your employees, you know, get your professionals together to support you, your CPA, your estate planner, your what else is there? What else would you want to get together with you?
Your evaluator, I would have.
Yeah. Evaluation, a company you need to evaluate your company, but definitely get your, you know, trusted board of advisor together to help kind of advise you through this, because this is going to be one of the largest transaction you're going to have. And of course, also be careful of the tax impacts, whether you're going to sell it, whether you're going to gift it. There are a lot of tax impacts that goes with all of this. So make sure you're clear on that. And so, you know, like, you're not ended up with some big old tax bill even after mm-hmm. you exit, right? Retirement's not that fun when you have a big tax bill that you have to pay. Mm-hmm. Or you realize that you ended up handing a big tax bill to those that are either inheriting your company or gifting your company, whatever the case may be. So just make sure you're clear on that. But definitely get your trusted advisors together.
Absolutely. My recommendation comes to you in the form of homework. I was inspired by these great questions on the Alan Taylor Brokers website and added some of them to my own questions to answer. Ask yourself and answer them before you consider selling your business to the person you're thinking of selling the business to, child or not. The link is going to be in our show notes. So, is your child more qualified than the most qualified person in your company to run the business? Does your child have the acumen experience, and education needed to run your business more effectively and efficiently than you. Will the sale of your business to your child or children cause discontent or an imbalance in your company? Do you need liquidity from the sale of your business to fund your retirement? If so, will you get that number by selling the business to your family member? Does the fam, this comes back to the whole money thing. Like, you got to make sure you're making enough money off of this. Does the family, and by that I mean the whole unit, need to own the business in order to maintain their current lifestyle and build wealth? Who benefits the most from the sale of this business? If you didn't gift this business to your child, would they have started a business anyway? Is your legacy the business itself, or would the proceeds from the sale be a better inheritance? Mm-hmm. Think about that. What is best for the future of the business? Is the sustainability of the business the priority, or is generating ongoing wealth for the family the primary goal? What are your goals for the future? Is it the ability to enjoy retirement, semi-retirement, or do something else? Is it the financial well-being of your children, grandchildren? Is it the long-term viability of the business? You got to list out your top priorities and put them in order. Lastly, do you feel you can give up control of the business once the sale is done?
That's a big one.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, the notes, or rather the link will be in our show notes.
Yep.
Definitely write down those questions. Think about it. Even if you're not looking to sell right now, even if you're not looking to sell for 10, 15 years, like myself, I'm not looking to sell for a while, but these are good questions to ask yourself, tuck them away somewhere, come back to them and see if your answers are still the same. And if they are, that tells you something. It'll give you some insight, especially if you aren't sure who you want to sell the business to.
I think the questions are great to give you perspective for something that you're closely tied to.
Mm-hmm. Please join us for our next episode, where we're going to discuss what happens after the sale. We're going to talk about what you should prepare yourself for, how you should prepare yourself, especially emotionally, and give you some ideas on, like, basically what to do after you sell your business. Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. And until next time, mind your business behind your small business, because all great success starts small.